Welcome to the Jasmine Star Show. We're at the time of this recording, I am staring outside of my window at a bright blue sky with soft breezes blowing towards the right. So I would guess that would be the west. And I can't help but think this right here, this episode was intended to be created today. And if you are listening to this when we dropped the episode, or it happens to be sent to you from a friend or somebody who loves you and believes in you, or perhaps you just somehow stumble upon this very conversation, please know this is the right moment and you are in the right place. You know, oftentimes I think that there are things that exist inside of me and they have to come out of me, almost like a dragon. I know, it doesn't really make sense. I get that it sounds a little funny, a little weird, a little unexpected, but that's the vision. That's the idea that I have in my mind. It feels like this dragon, this mighty beast with a fiery mouth and wings and a long tail that will terrify you. It has to come out of me. And oftentimes when this happens, it only happens in two ways. It comes out of me by way of a very large white piece of paper. They have these like oversized post-it notes that you can get from like Office Depot. They're probably like 3 feet by 4 feet. It is a life-size post-it note or a whiteboard. Well, today it is coming to you by way of an oversized post-it note. And I had to write them all down. It was like furious. I'm like, I just need to talk about these things. And if you hear like junk in the background, that is me and my white piece of paper, because it is all of my thoughts and I had to get them out. And the minute they were out, I took a deep breath and then I said, and now we record. And the thing about this is I had written all of this and then I stepped away from it. I spent days away from these thoughts and these things that came out because I said, if I share something so personal with people on the podcast, am I okay with that being out in the ether? Whenever we create, whenever we make anything that comes from us or as a part of our business, the minute it is out there, we never get it back. We don't own it anymore. It is of the world. And so the things I'm about to share, my personal mindset shifts for business. In fact, the top 5 mindset shifts that I have made in my business, they're really personal. And when I share things, I want to make sure that I am respecting my boundaries, my story, but that I don't make this podcast about me. Nobody needs to listen to another podcast around somebody pontificating about their own thoughts. What I want to do, and what I want to be very clear about, is this podcast is a person pontificating about their thoughts in relation to you, in relation to your journey. Because I firmly believe the minute I am able to share or disseminate lessons I have learned or things that I've changed that aren't serving me or that are serving me, I can share both of those. And then if you apply them and you get similar results, then I think we're better because of it. So this is me honoring this journey and talking about the mindset shifts that I have made about my business. So without further ado, I have named each one. I know, it's like a chapter of a book, y'all. It is a chapter of a book. Okay, so I'm gonna move my notes. So why am I bringing this up now? The reason for this podcast is understanding that we're in the business of having a business. And if you're anything like me, I wanted a business not to become popular, but to be profitable. And so oftentimes when I am required to make big changes in my life or my business, it's because I want it to directly impact my bottom line. I am in business to not just make money, but to create wealth. And so that is why I feel so passionate about sharing mindset shifts, because I believe that they could help you as much as they has helped me. And the bigger the mindset change I had, the bigger the business grew as a result. So the bigger changes and the different bigger beliefs I had to believe when I fully embraced it and it became of me, the bigger the business grew. So let's go back. We're gonna be talking about the 5 mindset shifts that I have changed in my business to get big results. The first one, 2017. This is what I am calling the leave room for magic mindset shift. Now, I have since changed it to leave room for the miracle. Here's why. Okay, so I joined a mastermind And the person who was leading the mastermind, his name was James Wedmore. And this was in November 2017. And he rolled out large pieces of paper. And he said, we're going to plan the year for revenue. So we were going to be planning for 2018. So we had these large pieces of paper. And there was about 15 of us, I think, in the mastermind at the time. And we were staying at an Airbnb, a really large Airbnb, and we all had our own section of the lower portion of the house. And so there was this dining room and a dining room table, and I cleared everything from the dining room table, and I rolled out this large parchment paper, and then I had written out my year, and I decided to write it out by quarter. It was easier for me to see 3 months at a time. And what I saw was a big blank area in quarter four of 2018. And so from November 2017, I could see Q1, Q2, and Q3 of 2018, but I couldn't see quarter four. Now, I had a revenue goal and I had plans, but I didn't know quite how I was going to reach it. I could fill in some of the blanks, but not all of them. And as much as I tried that weekend to think about, well, what could I do? What could go here in 2018? James looked to me and he says, can you not leave room for magic? And when I heard that, I have to tell you, it was a very James thing to say because I don't really believe in magic. I was never like the, oh, let's practice some magic tricks. I was never the person who went, you know, to magic shows. And even though at the time I had a really good friend who loved magic and he had a membership, it's very elusive, right? It's very difficult to get a membership to the Magic Castle in Hollywood. Well, he had one. And if you have a membership, you can bring guests. And so he invited JD and I, and he was just like, this friend, it wasn't James, okay? I'm shifting gears to a side story to talk about why I just have never really understood the idea of magic. It's neither here nor there. And so our friend invites us to dinner at the Magic Castle, and he is hyping this thing up. So we pull up, and if you're unfamiliar with the Magic Castle in Hollywood, I want you to think so distinctly of old school Hollywood Hills. We're talking about the Magic Castle was probably built in like the 1940s and 1950s. This is where if you practice magic, if you are a magician, if you have any aspiration to do that, the Magic Castle is basically Mecca. That is where you are going to be going. Oh, and you have to dress up. Like, you have to actually dress like nice, like you're going to a very nice dinner party. And so we pull up to LA, and there's all of these fancy cars. It's Hollywood. It's very distinctly Hollywood. And they have like these big ornate doors, and then there's elevators, and you can go into different rooms, and there's magic shows. And with each subsequent room that we would go to, he would look to us with such anticipation, like he was like, this is it, right? Like, wait. This guy's the best. And then before the magic trick had been like ultimately like revealed, he would be looking at JD and I to like, so that our faces could really mirror the magic we saw on the stage. And so like soon enough by the end of the night, I found myself kind of sort of acting because I was so thankful to be there and I really liked our friend and I wanted to like make him not feel like he wasted this invitation on us. So I found myself being like, wow. I'd raise my eyebrows and be like, blink really fast, be like, wow. Oh my God. But at the end of the night, I was like, I don't really know. Like magic, I'm not that interested in it. Okay. So now, years later, we're here, 2017, and James says, leave room for magic. And all I think of is, I better raise my eyebrows and blink my eyes really fast because magic, wow. Okay. Here's what I absolutely know. When he says leave room for magic, here's what it did not mean. It didn't mean just cross my fingers and hope for something. That's not magic. Looking back, and even in that moment, I realized that it meant blocking out a runway to create something, building a timeline to build, plan for a project, even if you aren't quite sure what that project is. At that moment, I realized I had never given myself the opportunity to just say, this is blank space. And though I might not know it now, I believe and have faith that something is coming. But if I know I'm going to be creating something from scratch, why am I not leaving blank space to do that? That, my friends, is leaving room for magic. Soon to me, a miracle. So let's go back to what happens. So in 2018, we did not launch anything else other than social curator. Now, prior to that, in 2017, I had launched Insta 180, an Instagram for Business course. I had launched Path to Profitability. It's how to build a brand and market in social media. That was the year that we debuted Social Curator. So it's 2017, y'all, there were so many things happening in the business. I felt like I was running 1,000 miles a minute. This was the first full year, the first full year. So I had retired as a professional photographer at the end of 2016. And 2017 was the first year that I had gone all in building an online business, not just a business online. And so I felt this immense sense of pressure to have it figured out. And if I can go back to myself, I would say, like, you're doing such a great job. Just continue to figure it out. But can you not release the pressure on having to feel like you have to know every answer for everything? Because you don't, and nobody ever does. So 2017, we had a ton going on, and then we made the big, bold move to really over-index and grow Social Curator. That's what was happening in 2018. So we found that a membership was the sweet spot for the business. I really liked it. It filled me up. It allowed me to still be creative in new and different ways. I liked creating the fresh content. I liked being in the community. I liked doing the coaching. And I was like, oh, the courses were recorded and then distributed, and they were for a short amount of time. The membership was ongoing. So in 2017, we had launched all three of those programs, and it was a lot. And during that year, it was the best year that I had done up into the business at that point. But when I look back at it, I'm going to quote something that Rory Vaden often says, and he even said it here on my podcast. He said, diluted focus gets diluted results. And even though the business had done really great, I was saying a lot of messages. I was using a lot of words online, so much so that people knew I was creating and people knew that I was selling, but I don't know if anybody could really clearly say, oh, that's the thing that she does. That specific thing is what she's known for. And so we said, what if we just focus on one thing for a year? And that year, the business more than tripled with just one offer. So I think by leaving that gap in 2018, so as I'm forecasting from 2017 into 2018, leaving that gap allowed me to breathe, to focus, to say I had latitude. And it took a lot of confidence to say, only in retrospect, I would say you needed that quarter to build, create, and have a foundation for the thing that would end up tripling the business. Now, I did now, years later, change it from magic to miracle. Because when I think of the word magic, I think, oh, there's got to be a trick. You know how magicians say it's like the eyes don't always see anything. You know, magic is not what the eye truly sees. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that. It didn't feel like it was real to me. And a miracle makes me feel like it's part of a bigger plan, that something is bigger than just me. And it's going to require a level of behavior and faith that for me in the business was active, not, oh, a trick that only some people can see. I believe it's capable and open for everyone. So now the mindset shift that I look back and I asked myself from 2017 and then 2018, and I'm asking myself today, can I create space for a miracle? And I want you to answer that question as well. So the second mindset shift, this also happened in 2017. Y'all, 2017, that was like a banger of a year. I'll tell you, that mindset shift has been called choose your opponent carefully. So like I had mentioned, I was part of a mastermind, and the mastermind would be taking places in different states and cities around the world. And so the one where we had done the planning, that was done in Charleston, and we had another one in New York City. And I will tell you that this particular in-person meetup for the mastermind was extraordinarily difficult for me, because when I was there, I got word from somebody on our team that word had got out about a launch, and we were keeping that particular launch very close to the chest. We were going to be launching it in a very unique way, and I was really excited to debut it. Well, unbeknownst to me, somebody on my team, so this is 2015, the only full-time employees that the business has is JD and myself. That's it. We were working with contractors. The entire team was contractors. Most of them were all part-time. So this is me for the first time ever having a team, ever having like, and when you say team, I mean it like working with a group of people who identify as part of my team and as part of other people because they have their own business as independent contractors. And so unbeknownst to me, somebody on my team was also working on somebody else's team and ended up telling that other team the model in which we were using to launch a course. And then the other team launched the course in the same way before we did. And it sounds so petty now, like when I think back at it, it's like, ah. But at the time, it wasn't that it was related to the launch. It wasn't the style of the launch. It wasn't even that it was said. It was that we had conversations privately on our team that were shared with others, and I didn't know who had actually shared it. At the time, I think there was like eight contractors we were working with. And I looked around and I thought, who can I trust? I can't trust anybody. And I feel so stupid. I feel so stupid that I didn't know as independent contractors, they would be talking to other people. And the feelings that came up were betrayal. And then I felt at the deep core, I think that betrayal was just disguising my embarrassment. I was so embarrassed because I didn't know who to trust. And I was so embarrassed because I felt stupid. Like, how did I not realize that other people were not going to, how did I not realize other people were going to talk? Why would I just assume that there was some sort of allegiance? And it was at that mastermind that James pulled me aside. We're there in New York City. We're at a hotel and they had this beautiful staircase. And he pulled me out of the conference room and into the staircase. And I was there with JD. And he said, what is up with you? Like, what's going on? Like, you're literally emanating energy that's so not you. And I said everything I just told you. Like, I felt betrayed. I was embarrassed. I felt stupid. And James had said, can you imagine yourself right now? Can you do an exercise with me? And I was like, okay, fine. He says, can you picture yourself as a boxer in a ring? So you have your gloves on, you're in a ring, you're ready to fight, and that fighter is you. You are that fighter. And so there I am with my eyes closed in the stairwell, picturing myself in like those red satin shorts. My hands are in red boxer gloves. And he asked me, who is your opponent? He said, are you a fighter, Jasmine? And I said, yes, I'm a fighter. He asked me that question because that's how I self-identified for so long. I'm a fighter. And so he used my description back to me and he said, are you a fighter? And I said, yes. And he says, who's your opponent? Who is in the ring with you? And I stood there with my eyes closed and I couldn't think. I couldn't think of anybody. I couldn't imagine my opponent. And I like had my eyes closed and I was like, I don't know. He says, Jasmine, who is your opponent? I said, I don't know. He said, it's you. You're your opponent. It's you against you in the ring. When you are calling yourself stupid, and when you're embarrassed, and when you're talking to yourself so negatively, the person you are pummeling with those red gloves is you. It's you against you. And he asked me, how could you ever win if all you did was beat yourself up? On that day, my entire life changed. I identified as a fighter because my whole life, I felt like I had to fight to get everything I ever had. And maybe that was true. Maybe it is true. But if I identify with myself as a fighter, I need to clearly identify my opponent. Because if I don't know who or what I am fighting, I am only beating myself up. It is me against me. And that day sparked a question. What would it look like if I didn't beat myself up? Could you just imagine? I couldn't imagine a reality where I didn't beat myself up. Because the struggle for me was, up until that point, I actually didn't believe nice things about me. It's like so embarrassing to admit. This is very honest. Up until that point, I just never believed nice things about me. I didn't believe them from anybody else. And I sure as heck did not believe them from me. I didn't believe I was smart. I didn't believe that I was a standout. I didn't believe that I had some sense or ability that anybody else had or did not have. I just didn't. I didn't believe any single nice thing about me. And I falsely used that as fodder. I used my negative thoughts. I used my negative narrative as fodder, as a thing to push me on. Be like, I told myself, I believed that the meaner I spoke to myself, like that drill sergeant in my head, the better I would perform. The extra rep that I would do, the extra commas and zeros I would add to my bank account because I'm whipping my arse into shape. But years of that was a beating to my soul. And so since then, I've done a lot of work around the way that I speak to myself. I worked with a therapist and he sat across from me and he explained this idea of having a neutral thought. And he had said, Jasmine, if you can't believe nice things or good things about you, could you not have a neutral thought about it? Like, okay, so for instance, I've been pretty open. I've always struggled with my weight. My weight has been an issue, a journey for my whole life. I grew up obese. I weighed more than my dad when I was 11 years old. I gained a lot of weight my senior year of high school. I lost a lot of weight my freshman year of college. I gained some weight back in my senior year of college. Like, I literally have gone up and down in my life and in my journey. And he explained it this way. He says, let's just say that you're on a weight loss journey. And, you know, a nice thought would be like, I look great and I feel great. And he says, but you wouldn't believe that. You wouldn't believe that thought. Like, I look great. I'm feeling great. Like, no, you don't. Like, that is not your truth. So instead, you default to, you don't feel great about yourself. You're not working hard enough. You're making bad decisions. Why is it taking so long? He's like, but a neutral thought is somewhere in the in-between. It's not the positive thought, like, I love myself despite however I look. But it's also not the thought that beats me into oblivion. It's a neutral thought. And that neutral thought could be, I've come a long way and I'm continuing to try every single day to make better decisions. And I'm doing a long path in history of eating terribly and eating to punish myself and eating to reward myself and eating to chain myself. The neutral thought is, I'm doing better every single day. So as you know, after years of practice, I'm definitely not perfect, but I now coach myself. Like, I literally have learned to repeat neutral thoughts to myself. And it started off for me at the gym. Like, before I would say, like, oh, it's so sad. I hate saying this to you guys. I hate it. But I would look at myself in the gym and be like, you look disgusting. Like, you're disgusting. There would be times where I would be like, how did you let yourself go like this? I will tell you that in 2020, I became a mother. The world shut down because of pandemic. I was living a very active lifestyle and everything in Southern California, like, closed down, all the gyms, everything. And so I did not at all practice self-care. I was very stressed during that time and I gained a lot of weight. And so getting back into the gym, it was, how can I start speaking to myself nicely? Like, what is the neutral thought? And this is still to this day, a lot of the mantras that I use. You're getting stronger. You're doing it. You're practicing. You made it into the room. That's it. When I'm in a class or when it's me against a barbell, all I simply say is, you're getting stronger. You're doing it. You're practicing. You made it in the room. So I still consider myself a fighter, but now my opponent is doubt and my opponent is fear. It is not me. So the mindset shift to choose your opponent carefully has been for me to choose carefully who I'm fighting against and to be my own coach. And I'm inviting you to the same mindset shift. Can you carefully choose who you're fighting against? And can you be your own coach? Now let's get into the third mindset shift. This happened in 2023, and this mindset shift is called Let People In. So I've spoken up plenty of times. I grew up poor, but my family was very happy. We were poor, but happy. Now, of course, I wanted more, but I wasn't controlled by it. I wasn't controlled by the desire for more. And so, you know, for us, we were poor, but it's not like we went without. I had just explained that I was obese as a child. So nobody looked at me as being like, that girl must be suffering. No, like, not at all. I was living in the land of decadence. We grew up in this town. My parents met, fell in love, got married in East LA. That is where they started their family. And then we later moved to an area called Baldwin Park and La Puente. A little rough and tumble. Well, at the time, there was, are you familiar with Hostess? Like the Twinkie, Ho-Ho, like that brand, Hostess? Well, Hostess had a discount store in La Puente. And this is where they would send like their old bread and their old pastries. And so probably like 4 or 5 blocks from where we lived, my sister and I would be able to get on our bikes. And for like 10 cents, we would buy expired goods. So it's just like, nobody was looking at me and being like, this poor girl is not getting what she wants. It was just like, no, I'm just eating old. It's like, you know what? Twinkie never expires, but technically they had to put an expiration date. I was like, we out here eating old Ho-Hos and Twinkies and like these apple pies for like 10 cents. So at the end of the day, we were getting what we wanted just differently. You know, like it's a dented cans at the grocery store and old bread from Hostess. Listen, you cut off the mold and you toast it. It's fine. At least that's what my parents said. Okay. I will say though, at the time, I became very aware of the things I had. And I became very aware of how I took care of things, how I saved things. This impression of not having and then having. It's when I got something. I've said the story on the podcast before, but I used to iron my money. And I would hide it in different places for those just-in-case moments. And so in 2007, I made $100,000 in my business. And by 2017, we were doing around $4 million in the business. And I have to tell you that in that decade, everything in my life changed so fast. Lightning fast. Like what I bought, how I bought it. I wasn't looking at prices at a restaurant anymore, which was crazy for a girl whose family went out to eat twice a month. We went out to eat on my dad's payday, and we would go to this restaurant called Durango's Restaurant. And my dad would be able to order a burrito and a Coke, and the rest of us, we were sharing plates and had water. But we thought that was amazing. But we looked at every price. There was no way we could order a drink on the menu because water was free. And that, if it's free, it's for me. That was the family motto. And so to go to a restaurant and not look at price was the richest thing I could ever do. I also began covering almost every meal when we went out to eat with family and friends. And I began shopping for groceries at stores I could never imagine shopping in. And then I started shipping groceries to friends and family if I felt like they needed help. Because for years, my family was the family that got that help. And it felt like such a great place to be in to pay it forward. And it was also at this time, I didn't know it. I only looked back at it then. I began slowly pulling away from sharing the highs and lows of my life. Now, it was completely unintentional. I love my friends. I love my family. And I didn't know that I was pulling back. I had no idea I was doing this. It was only later that I realized I was pulling back from sharing all of me out of protection. I pulled back showing love to JD in front of other people because other people didn't have that similar love with their partner. I held back talking about Luna because she is literally an angel baby. I would never talk to other parents about their babies because it made me feel like I was bragging about mine. She slept amazing. She was sleep trained by 4 months. She never cried unless it was a clear indication that she needed something. She was vibrant and lively and hit all of her milestones. And she was peaceful. And she was playing on her own at such a young age. She was sleeping through the night. Like, the kid was just like literally an angel baby. And when I would hear these other parents talking about, oh, getting up during the middle of the night and, oh, the tantrums and the meltdowns and did you this and do that. And I'm sitting there being like, I'm not going to say anything. I feel bad. I held back getting close to other people because the people who I loved and who I had grown up with now saw my life so different. And I didn't want my life to make them feel like any which way about theirs. Now, it's only later, it's only in retrospect that I look back at this mindset shift and what was happening. And I was showing up for them. And they were talking to me about what was going on in their life. But out of protection, me thinking, I don't want to make you feel bad, I wasn't sharing anything about mine. And as a result of me not sharing anything about my life, they felt further away from me. And unintentionally, I was there to help and hear them, but I was not allowing myself to get helped or them to hear from me. And that means it's inequitable. Any relationship is a give and a take. And even though my best intention was to give and give and give and give, if I wasn't taking anything from them, taking in a good way, like taking as in like, I need you to hear me, or can I ask you for this? Like, if I wasn't taking anything from them, it was really, really one-sided and they did not feel close to me. And so my mindset reset was hiding parts of me doesn't make it easier for other people. It pushes them away. So the mindset shift I had that really opened my life energetically for my business was, could I believe that being 100% of me wouldn't make others feel any less of being 100% of them? It was just an energetic shift and change that empowered me to show up in all areas of my life, of my business, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, energetically, as me. And when I did that, the way that I was creating and the way that I was showing up in the world was so different. The fourth mindset shift is what we call celebrate the waymakers. This is a mindset shift that existed for me in 2019. And, you know, I had mentioned like how I grew up and realizing what you have and what you don't have. And I didn't let it control me. I didn't let not having something control me, but that didn't mean I didn't want it for myself. That little word, that four-letter word, envy. You know, it was easy. It's easy to want what other people had. But I didn't realize that envy became a habit. It became a norm. Like, I didn't know I was being envious because it was just something that I defaulted to. My brain automatically defaulted to envy, even like I wasn't even conscious of it. It was just my mode of operation. And I dwelled in this constant state of want, even if I had so much more than I could ever dream. In 2019, I had more than there was no way in my entire life, ever in my professional career, could I ever imagine that what I had in 2019 was anything I would ever be able to have, period. And even then, I didn't know I was defaulting to envy. Now, once I realized how often I did this, how often I was like, oh, wait a minute. Is that envy? That's envy. And the more I started asking myself about my thoughts, I was like actually running my thoughts through an envy filter. And I started realizing, oh, whoa, that's envy? Mm-mm. So I started changing. I made the active decision in 2018 to change from envy to gratitude. Like whenever I, you know, I looked at somebody's house and I was like, oh my God, they just bought that house. That's so gorgeous. My default mode was subconsciously, I wish I had that. Then when I ran that through the filter, instead I just started saying, wow, I am so happy I have a roof over my head. I am so happy that my condo has been a condo I never thought I would ever be in. That shift from I wish I had it to, whoa, I am so happy for what I have now. And then the next state of this evolution, this mindset evolution, was celebrating. I started celebrating. When I ran things through the envy filter, is this envy? And if I realized it was, and then I said, oh, no, thank you. Thank you for this car. Thank you for this house. Thank you for the food in my fridge. And then I would celebrate the person who got the house, who got the car, who got the promotion, who got the feature, who launched that, who did something big. I legitimately started saying, good for you. Good for you. Because energetically, what I started saying is, I'm so happy you did that because you're a way maker for other people right behind you. Thank you for being proof that you bought that house, you bought that car, you launched that thing, you made that offer, you got that feature, you launched your podcast. Good for you. I started celebrating them because I said, you're a way maker. You're showing me what is possible. And if you did it, I'm going to try it too. And here's the crazy thing. The minute I started changing from envy to gratitude to celebration, I was happier. I was more hopeful. I began attracting more opportunities. I was genuinely so happy for other people that I began building new and real relationships with other people. I got close to them because they could smell, they could sense. I'm about you, dude. I'm clapping you up because one day you have proven to me I might have the chance to do the same. By celebrating others, I created a network of people who celebrated me when something good happened. Different, the same, smaller, bigger, they celebrated me. I simply became conscious of changing envy into celebration, into hoping for more. So my mindset shift for you is to ask yourself, are you unaware of envy? Can you choose to celebrate instead? By changing your outlook and who you are energetically, you will start attracting the very thing that you want, being surrounded by the very people who will be just as happy that you're there. Mm. Lastly, the last mindset shift, y'all, the last mindset shift. I will say that it started in 2016 and it's just moving us right into the present. This is an active mindset shift that I am taking again and again, and I'm calling this mindset shift, just get in the dang room. Now, I have to tell you, you will hardly ever have enough money to invest. And you're like, invest in what, Jasmine? Invest in whatever it is you darn well please. Because the bigger your business gets, the bigger your ambitions get, the bigger your success gets, there's new opportunities to do bigger things. And it will always feel like, just not enough money. That's the way the world works. You know, it's like, we know the very thing that we want. And it gets bigger and better over time. Now, the return on investment, your ROI, it might not be exactly clear, right? What is that thing you want to do? What is that event you want to go to? What is the conference you want to attend? What is the mastermind? What is the coach? What is the mentor? What is the programming? What is the MBA program? Whatever it is, the ROI might not be clear, but could you not figure it out? Could you not just get in the room? Could you not just bet on yourself and say, you know, if I was in there, I would find a way to make it work. I started off this podcast episode talking about my very first mastermind with James Wedmore, and that investment was $25,000, which was freaking crazy, y'all. That was crazy talk. Who's ever going to spend $25,000 figuring out something for their business? And then I made that decision and I didn't make $25,000. I made $255,000 in one launch. Not that year, baby, in one launch. And then I started joining different programs and I would only ask myself, is there something, if I could just get in the dang room, if you could just get in the dang room, could you not find a way to win? I bet on you. And the reason I could unabashedly say I bet on you is because I have people who have looked at me and said the same thing. I bet on you. Get in the dang room. Now, I had mentioned briefly on my birthday podcast episode, We dropped it on April 6th, and I mentioned that I was part of a 4-month mastermind with VaynerMedia that was brought to you by Gary Vaynerchuk. And I have to tell you that I battled so much making a decision to invest $50,000 in a 4-month program. And just in case you like, you tap on your headphones or you rewind it back 15 seconds and you're like, did she just say $50,000 for 4 months? And I did. I did say that. And I think that even just saying right now is the freaking craziest thing to admit publicly. But I thought about it and I stand by the decision. And so I didn't want to make an emotional decision because, I mean, y'all know here on this podcast, if you've been listening a while, you know I love Gare Bear. You know I love Gary Vee. You know, it's just like, I'm so inspired. I love what he does. I love how he thinks and I love how he builds and I love him as a business owner and I'm truly inspired. And so I did not want to make an emotional decision. So I'm currently a part of an executive coaching program and I am in with a group of guys and we've been now together like almost 2 years and there's 8 of us in this group. And I asked them like, do you think I should do this? Because it feels a little crazy to me. And Blake, he turned to me and said, well, you're an action taker. Just get in the room. Like being in the room is enough. Like you'll figure out how to get a $50,000 ROI by just being in the room. And he's like, but just in case that's not enough, do a pre-mortem and a pre-parade. He's like, literally a pre-mortem would be like literally write down what would have to happen in order for you not to have a positive ROI from this experience. Like write down what the worst possible situation. And then write down your pre-parade. Like write down the best possible situation that could happen as you making this investment. And I loved that advice. And so I'm sharing that with you right now. As you're figuring out, like get in the dang room, find yourself in places and around people who are expanders. And just in case you want to ensure that you're like not making a bad decision, write your pre-mortem and write your pre-parade. What is the worst case? What is the best case? And how do you make it a win? JT, another guy in my cohort, he had said, you know, when you're talking to your team about this, because I took it to the team and I was like, y'all, like, I want to be very transparent. This is a considerable investment for 4 months and it's going to require a lot of time from me. We're meeting every single week, sometimes twice a week. We're going to in-person events over the 4 months. Like, it's going to require a different level from me. Like, I need you to co-sign on this too. And JT had told me to remind the team that this team, they're looking at this as like almost like a pre-seed investor opportunity. He's like, Jasmine, they get to be on the ground floor as you start new things and you cater to new businesses and you have bigger conversations. Like they're pre-seed investors and they want to be with you on that ride to the Series A. He's like, you need to understand that they're getting in on the ground level of something that has the potential of being huge. Convey that to them and say the sacrifice now isn't for anything other than ultimate opportunities to grow. And Josh had said, Jasmine, when you make an investment to get in the room, can you not look at it as compounding brand building? He's like, you're building your brand by having those relationships and having these people talk about you in new sectors, in new ways. And even if you can't have a penny for penny ROI on that, that's compounding brand building. Ooh, y'all, let's go. I have always said, I'm a get in the room kind of girl. Like, if you don't let me into the door, I'm gonna go to a window. And if I can't get in through the window, I'm gonna climb on the roof and start removing the tiles. Let me in the room. Once I get in the room, once I see the game, when I hear the conversations, I feel like, dang it, I can figure this thing out. I could find a way to make it work. I always think about myself as I rode my bike to the Hostess thrift shop, that discount store. I could find a way to get the thing I want, even if it was not the way that everybody else was getting it. Could I take somebody else's moldy idea that had expired and cut it off and toast it and serve it up differently? Y'all, look what we just did. Look what we just did. We had a whole loop back, y'all. That is what we do here on the Jasmine Star Podcast. So for your mindset shift of just getting in the dang room, my question to you is, are you willing to invest in yourself to get in the room? Y'all, mindset shift number one, leave room for the miracle. Mindset shift number two is to choose your opponent carefully. Choose who you're fighting against and be your own coach. Mindset shift number three, can you let people in? Could you believe that being 100% of you won't make other people not feel okay to be 100% of them? Mindset shift number four was to celebrate the makers. Because if you are unaware of envy, can you not choose to celebrate instead? And mindset shift number five that has a radical change my business is to get in the dang room. Are you willing to invest in yourself to get in the room? Yo, this podcast, like I said, the dragons did not come to play. You can call me Khaleesi Star today. If you did not get that Game of Thrones reference, we might not be friends anymore. Thank you for listening to the Jasmine Star Show. Thank you for being here. I make these podcasts truly for you and to document the journey. It would mean the world to me if you left a review. I ask every episode and I know you dang tired of it, but if you're hearing this and you haven't left it, consider this a whole word. Have your mindset shift be, I could spend 30 seconds to leave a review for this podcast. Y'all, I read every single one of them. And when you tag on stories, I make sure that I personally respond. Yes, you and I, we're out here doing the dang thing and we're making mindset shifts that not just impact our lives, but our businesses, our families, and our legacies. I wish you all the best. Thank you for listening to the Jasmine Star Show.